I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Lawyers for Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein will be in Commonwealth Court in Harrisburg on Monday to argue for a recount of the presidential vote in Pennsylvania. Stein is calling for a recount in three states, all of which Donald Trump won. In fact, he beat Hillary Clinton by more than 70,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Stein received a little more than 49,000 votes. Angela Columbus has been covering the story for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where she is state government reporter. And Angela, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the argument that Stein's lawyers are going to make on Monday?
Well, it's sort of unclear at the moment. What we know is in their filing, they filed basically what amounts to a legal challenge of the election results in Commonwealth Court on Monday. And they said that they believe that there's legitimate and a good faith basis on which to file to contest the election results, because they believe that perhaps there may have been some sort of hacking or manipulation of voting machines. And so they believe that a recount may show that indeed there was some sort of interference with the actual results in Pennsylvania.
Perhaps probably doesn't work very well in a court. Do they have to prove or provide some kind of evidence of fraud when they are in court on Monday?
I've talked to a couple of legal experts who said yes. I mean, it's one thing to have a good faith, belief that there may have been some sort of outside interference, but you really, if you want to convince the court to order a recount and go through what will likely be a very long, complicated process of a recount, you are going to have to bring in voters who will testify to the fact that they believe that somehow their votes were inaccurately tallied on election day. But there is nothing in the actual filing in Commonwealth Court that shows any sort of concrete evidence of that type of tampering.
I saw a quote from the Pennsylvania Secretary of State, Pedro Cortez. He said, when everything is said and done, you're going to see that the results are accurate. Are they perfect? Did they miss one vote here or there? To see something systemic that will change the outcome of the election? No, nothing like that, I anticipate, will come out of the recounts. Now, will the Secretary of State be in the courtroom on Monday? Does someone represent Pennsylvania and its government in court?
Well, the court has set as noon on Friday the deadline for anybody to intervene, and we fully expect that the state Republican Party will file some sort of motion for intervention. The Department of State, which essentially oversees elections in Pennsylvania, has not said yet whether it intends to intervene, but one would think that if you have the Secretary Pedro Cortez out there talking very openly about the fact that he believes that the election in Pennsylvania was honest and accurate, that he will be, or somebody from the Department of State will be in court on Monday making that point.
I'm curious about what the timeline is for all of this. Of course, we know that the Electoral College meets in December. Is that the ticking timeline?
What we know from the court's order yesterday setting the time for the hearing is that they want to have some sort of conclusion by December 13th, and that is when states are supposed to report to the Electoral College who their choices for president are. So we certainly seem to be working against that December 13th deadline. When I was talking to a couple of these election lawyer experts yesterday, they were saying it's doable to meet that deadline, but there's going to, if the court on Monday decides to move forward with some sort of recount, there's going to be just a crush of litigation involving everything from who would be in the room during a recount to appeals. I think we're kind of in uncharted territory, and there's a lot of unknowns that could really delay the process.
My understanding is that they want, or Jill Stein and her lawyers want, a hand recount. So the idea of looking at paper ballots, do we have such a thing in Pennsylvania?
Well, we really don't. I mean, a lot of the machines are electronic voting machines, and they don't spit out essentially a paper tally of somebody's vote. So, for instance, when you go into the voting booth and you make your choices, once you press the vote button, you don't get a paper copy of that. What our understanding of what it would involve is that they will compare what has been described as the little black box of the voting machine. They will compare the tallies on that versus something called the tape that comes out of the voting machine as well, which records individual votes. It doesn't say who the voters are, but right. It records votes. I'm not sure how that necessarily is going to produce the evidence they're looking for. I think what they haven't said in their filing, and they probably will ask for on Monday, is some sort of a forensic examination of the voting machines themselves to determine whether they had been infected with malware.
Well, and again, going back to Cortez, he's quoted as saying, and this is from, I'm not sure what I'm reading from here, from the Associated Press, that Pennsylvania is immune from hacking because its voting machines and tabulating machines aren't connected to the internet.
Well, that indeed is what he said, but computer security experts have been saying for years now that it doesn't matter whether a voting machine is connected to the internet, because the ballot is designed on a separate government computer, which may not have the level of security that would prevent a hacking to occur. And that's where ballots are designed and loaded onto these cartridges, which then get loaded into the voting machine. So it doesn't really matter whether the machine itself is connected to the internet or not.
Pennsylvania, of course, one of three states. Donald Trump won by about 70,000 votes in Pennsylvania, much more than he did in these other two states. It seems like it's a pretty high bar for any change of the results.
Right. Well, Jill Stein's campaign has said as much, that they don't expect some sort of change in the actual result, but what they want to do is sort of instill trust again in the election system.
Well, Angela, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Such an interesting story. And she's been covering the story for the Philadelphia Inquirer, where she is state government reporter. Well, Democrats in the House are voting today for their minority leader. Nancy Pelosi is being challenged by Tim Ryan, who says the party has lost its brand representing the working class. There's also a contest to head up the Democratic National Committee. And Keith Ellison, who is African-American and Muslim and a Bernie Sanders supporter, is getting some high-profile support, although not from the White House. The Democratic Party is doing some soul searching about why voters who had supported President Obama two times chose Donald Trump. But even more than that, why the party has lost so many seats on the state level, something like 900 since the shellacking of 2010. Is it the message? Is it the messenger? Is it the candidates, redistricting, money, anything else? Joining us is Carmel Martin, and she's Executive Vice President for Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, formerly an Assistant Secretary in the Department of Education under the Obama administration, and an informal advisor to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign on education and child care issues. Joining us from the NPR studios in Washington. And Carmel Martin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Caitlin Sweeney, Press Secretary for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. And Caitlin Sweeney, nice to have you with us as well.
Yes, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Carmel, let me go to you, and let's begin with Hillary Clinton. Of course, she is winning the popular vote, but the way we have our system structured, you have to win the electoral vote to become the president of the United States. She lost states like Pennsylvania that went to Barack Obama two times and also went to Al Gore and other Democrats as well. Does Hillary Clinton represent what's wrong with the Democratic Party?
No, I don't think she represents what's I think it was an extremely close election. I think we have to keep in mind that she did win the popular vote by 2 million votes nationally. In the states that she lost, that Obama had won, it was extremely close. But obviously, Democrats need to figure out how to be more responsive to the feeling of economic anxiety that people across the country have. I believe her policies were responsive to those anxieties, but I think Trump was able to come forward with a much more aggressive rhetoric and made promises that he seems to have no intention of keeping. He also, I think, had a very strong message about shaking things up in Washington. I think the irony of that is even before he's taken office, it seems very clear that he has no intention of really shaking up Washington. His transition team is filled with insiders and people with deep conflicts of interest. His nominees so far also show that they have do not have the interest of working people in mind. So I think Democrats need to do a better job of being able to put forward very aggressive policy agenda around addressing people's economic anxiety, and also show that they're willing to take on political reform in Washington. But I think, you know, the bigger problem is Donald Trump made these promises, and he's immediately contradicting them with the people that he's putting forth. And I think Democrats have to really be willing to stand up and point out the hypocrisy in that. I think his commerce secretary, who's just announced, is a perfect example of that. He's made a career on Wall Street, turning around, doing flipping companies, laying off workers. He invested in a mining entity that where people died, and yet he's arguing that there's too much regulations, despite the fact that mining company did not follow federal regulations and people died because of it. So I think that we really just need to keep bringing home that point.
And I want to pick up on a couple of things, but I want to get Caitlin in before our break. Caitlin Sweeney, from your perspective, was Hillary Clinton the problem?
I think the biggest takeaway from this election was that voters were hungry for change. Clinton couldn't be that change candidate just from the nature of who she was. And Trump, although he's part of the corporate aristocracy, could credibly argue that he was an anti-Washington, anti-establishment candidate. I think what the party needs to do going forward is make it clear to voters that we're not a creature of Washington, that we need to have a party that originates at the local level, that's built from the grassroots up. We can't arrive 6 months out from the election, drop a bunch of ads, and expect people to respond. You know, we need to be invested in city council meetings and state senate races and building an organic relationship with voters 365 days of the year, every year, so we're inspiring them to vote and not dragging them to vote. I do agree with what Carmela said, that although Trump ran as this anti-establishment candidate, he is stocking his administration with D.C. insiders, with billionaires that are interested more in self-dealing and corporate interests in the working class. He is indicating that he is going to be pursuing the same failed Ryan McConnell agenda, privatizing Medicare, getting public education for private schools, which is not what his voters put him in the White House to do. So I'll be really interested to see, you know, how long they stick on his side.
We're going to take that short break and then get back to our conversation talking about the Democratic Party. Does it need to change? Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with Caitlin Sweeney. She's press secretary for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. And with Carmel Martin, she's the executive vice president for policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And we are talking about the fact that the Democrats didn't just lose the White House on Election Day, but over the years has been losing Democrats on state levels, something like 900 in the last 4 or 5 years. We want to hear from you about what you think the Democratic Party should do. Go left, go right, stay somewhere in the middle. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY. Radio Times. Carmel, if I can go back to you, and if the problem with the Democratic Party really predates what happened to Hillary Clinton and her supporters on Election Day, but really goes back to 2010, the shellacking that President Obama talked about, is part of the problem represented by the president himself?
No, I mean, I think President Obama is hugely popular and has been a really great president. I think one of the challenges that he's had is that he's obviously had and I don't think this is really open to dispute, he's had a Congress that has basically refused to work with him. But despite that and had made it their mission to try to stop him from accomplishing good things for the people because they put their political interests over the interests of the American people. Despite that, President Obama has been able to make great progress for people. I think the economy is a perfect example of that. I think he would say himself that he could have made greater progress if he had cooperation from Congress. And I think moving forward, what the Democratic Party needs to do is to fight for more progress in that arena. That means a real infrastructure package, not a package that is just a tax boondoggle for Wall Street, which is the package that Donald Trump has put forth. And we need to fight for initiatives that will increase wages, like increasing the minimum wage, and push back on what appears to be the plan of the Republican Party under Donald Trump, which is to give even more money to the top 1%. So I think what the Democratic Party has to consistently push for is an agenda that is about working class people, that it would bring real results for working class people and not additional money in the pockets of people, wealthy people and corporate interests.
But so interesting to me, I mean, he put his popularity, he put his legacy on the line for Hillary Clinton. He campaigned loud and hard for her. He was in Philadelphia, then an extraordinarily huge campaign just across the street here the day before election. And yet, Carmel, he wasn't able to, that was not, he couldn't cinch the vote for her.
Well, again, I think you know, Democrats need to step back and figure out how they can be more responsive to people's economic anxiety, not just in terms of putting forth policies, but being able to speak to that anxiety. I also think that, as Caitlin pointed out, people are looking, they're frustrated that more things are not happening in Washington. I think, again, the irony here is things are not happening in Washington because of the Republican control of Congress, but they're looking for action. They're looking to shake things up and have things move forward. So again, I think there we have to show that that Democrats need to show that they're ready to take action that will help the American people. But really, just want to again point out that in several of these places, the votes was very close. And again, she won 2 million more votes than Donald Trump. So I think that's really significant. That doesn't mean the Democrats don't have to take stock and think about how they can do better moving forward. But I do think it shows that it's not that there was a colossal failure, but rather that we have a deeply divided country that that wants to see change. So I think we have to show, Democrats have to show that they're ready to bring that change.
Caitlin, I'm curious about whether you think going forward the Democratic Party needs to be then the party of Bernie Sanders, who in certain ways had a similar message to Donald Trump, although he used very different kind of language talking about the problem, a party of Elizabeth Warren. Is that the direction you think the Democratic Party should go in?
Well, yes, I think that we're kind of in a moment of reckoning for our party. The good news is it doesn't have to be hard. It's going to be hard, but it doesn't have to be painful. We've been down this road in 2004, the 1980s. We know we can do it. As Carmela said, Clinton won the popular vote by a wide margin, and the states that she lost, it was really close. We know that our policies are popular with many kinds of voters. Our issue is that we need a sharper economic message, more powerful economic message that harkens back to those New Deal roots. We need to relentlessly challenge corporate power. We need to have a systemic critique of the system, the way that Sanders and Warren did, that the system is rigged, that the powerful interests are working against you. But as the Democratic Party, we will work for you. And then we really need to build relationships in areas that we haven't competed in, really, rural areas. And we need to recruit candidates that come from those areas that can speak to voters at that deep personal level. That's one of the reasons that we support Ellison for DNC chair, because he's a progressive movement partner. He's been in the trenches with progressives, and he's talking about kind of building a grassroots infrastructure from the ground up. I think what Democrats should do in Congress is kind of follow the lead of Elizabeth Warren and saying, you know, well, as Carl said, we'll work on a real infrastructure bill that's not giveaways to corporations. We'll work on a real jobs bill that puts people to work. We will not compromise on our principles. We will not cave. We will fight. And that seems a very powerful message we'll be able to take forward into 2018.
One of the critiques that I read in preparation for the show was that the Democratic Party needs to take a page from the Tea Party that came into power, obviously challenging the status quo, angry. They are giving some of the Republicans a run for their money, but that there are lessons from the Tea Party and what they have done to Republicans or for Republicans. Caitlin, do you agree with that at all?
I think we need to have a grassroots party. I think that if we're talking about coming out from maybe not the establishment, yes. But I think the difference between the Tea Party and, say, you know, Sanders supporters of the Warren wing is that we are an inclusive party. That when we talk about economic opportunity, when we talk about equality, we're not just saying it for a certain kind of group of people. We're saying it for everybody. So that would be, you know, a complete difference between that. But in terms of investing in all 50 states and in areas that we haven't been competitive in the last 20, 30 years, yes.
What do you think, Carmel? Then we'll get some callers, and I got a lot of comments as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree that we do need to do a better job of tapping into grassroots. And I think what we've seen in just the last couple of weeks is there's a tremendous energy outside the Beltway at the state and local level among people who are shocked and extremely disturbed by the fact that Donald Trump is now the president. So I think we Democrats need to harness, and organizations like mine need to harness that energy to help push back and fight Trump and stop him from turning back the progress that was made in the Obama years in his presidency, and push for a bold policy agenda that benefits all Americans, not just the top 1%. And I think we need to start now by really pushing back on these nominees who, again, are people with deep financial ties and conflicts of interest, people who have not spent their life fighting for people, but on the contrary, have spent their life moving jobs overseas and laying people off. And I think we need to start making that case and harnessing the energy outside Washington to push for a positive agenda for all Americans.
And that's Carmel Martin, Executive Vice President for Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Caitlin Sweeney with us as well, Press Secretary for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. We are talking about the challenges, the problems facing the Democratic Party. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Mike from Germantown to join us. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, ladies.
Morning.
I'd like to take issue a little bit with your guests. They seem to keep referring to the Democratic Party like it was the party of the 60s, where labor, primarily organized labor, was such a significant part of that. Now, organized labor is about 30% of the workforce, not, you know, 15% versus like 30% back in the 60s, or even less. That's right. So I'd like to suggest that the Democratic Party is just as much involved with the big money as the Republicans. And to suggest otherwise, that they have the working people at heart, it just seems to fly in the face of what's really happening. I'd also like to suggest, in the middle part of our state, we're not red or blue. At the turn of the century, the real turn of the century, the mill, the mine, and the factory owners were what? Republicans. The immigrant workers had to join the other team called the Democrats. But it was those same purple people out there in the center part of the state were fiscally conservative, family valued, that put Trump in the office. So I think they're really out of touch with what their real demographic is. Now, of course, we have a difficult time.
No, that's fine,
here, because we have the entitlement Democrats and not the fiscally conservative, family-valued crowd, the working class that's out there in the middle. But
let me take your first basic point, which is that the Democrats are too allied with big money, and certainly Hillary Clinton raised a lot of big money from big donors. Carmel, you're at the Center for American Progress. How much do you think that's a problem and hurt her particularly, but also is a problem for the party?
Well, I think it's a problem that people have the perception that Democrats are as aligned with big money as Republicans. I think there's a huge, if you look at, for example, Barack Obama and the way he ran the federal government and fought for working Americans, I think that as the leader of our party, he has demonstrated the opposite, that he every single policy that he engaged in was about helping people who middle class, working class, people aspiring to be in the middle class, and his focus was on that, versus contrast with the policies that Donald Trump is moving forward with, like a perfect example, the infrastructure bill. It's basically a way to finance infrastructure projects by paying for them through private equity, which is much more expensive than doing it through publicly funded financing, and it'll be a huge boondoggle to people on Wall Street and won't really create the jobs that we need to create to help middle-class Americans. So I think that we have to look at the substance of the policies, and I think that's where you can see a huge contrast between the Democratic Party's track record versus the Republican Party's track record. But I do think people, they want to see government reform. They do want to see things like campaign finance reform, and I think that that is something that Democrats should embrace and make a top part of their agenda. We did polls, a poll that we released last week, and most Trump voters were voting for Trump, not for his policy agenda, but because they thought he would go in and shake up Washington. I think Democrats really need to take that fact to heart and really make political reform a top agenda item moving forward.
Caitlin, let me go to you. And certainly Bernie Sanders made campaign finance and money and the billionaires than millionaires that he talked about. He made that so much a centerpiece of his campaign, and you can't roll back the clock or redo history, but it would be interesting to think about whether that would have worked if he had been the Democratic nominee.
Well, I agree with Kamala that certainly our policies in the Democratic Party are stronger for labor and stronger for the working families by far than the Republicans. We have a proven track record on issues like that. But we haven't been as relentless in challenging corporate power recently than we could. It has not, I think, escaped voters' attention that, you know, we were in charge in 2009 during the height of the recession, and not a single banker went to jail for their role in helping crash the world economy. We can't just have, you know, policies for the working family. We also need to call out corruption when we see it. We need to challenge corporate power. We need to provide a systemic critique of the system in the way that Elizabeth Warren has and Bernie Sanders has. And we just need altogether a sharper economic message to take to voters.
Let me see. Mike, thanks for the call. Let me see what Carol from Wilmington has to say. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think we have to be careful because I think the biggest problem with the Democratic Party right now is that we are too reactive and not strategic. I think that the Republican Party has a strategic long view. When they went for the 2010 elections, got the House, the state houses, gerrymandered districts, so that even if we got every voter to come out to vote, we'd have a hard time winning back the House. So we have to become strategic. We have to have a 2020 view on this thing, looking at the year 2020, not as the president or not as a single election, but looking at it as a big picture. How do we get our state houses back? How do we get our districts back? How do we fairly district the United States? So we need to start having those conversations as opposed to one election, one situation, and focusing on the top office as opposed to focusing downstream to these local elections and really building back up this grassroots effort of the Democratic Party to respond to the people.
Well, Carolyn, I appreciate the call, and I'm tossing that first to you, Carmel, then to you, Caitlin. Do you think she's on to something? That it's interesting she talks about being too reactive when it's clear that Donald Trump is more reactive, I think, than anyone, especially with his Twitter account. But that the Democratic Party, Carmel, needs to be more strategic.
Well, I do agree with the caller that we need to think in the longer term and not just about the next election. And I think redistricting is a huge issue. One of the reasons the House is in Republican hands is because of gerrymandering of districts across the country. So I think we definitely need to focus on that. I think part of the long term thinking more in a long term way is by having a strong message about political reform, about campaign finance reform, about redistricting, about higher standards of ethics in Congress and in the executive branch. It's not enough that Donald Trump is stepping down from his companies and turning them over to his children. He needs to have a real blind trust set up so he does not have any control. And he's not even in office yet, and he's using calls with foreign leaders to move forward his business interests. I mean, I think we need to bring light to that, and I think we have to demand political reform on that front. And I think that is both a short-term need because Donald Trump is who Donald Trump is, but I think it's also part of having a longer view of how to be responsive to what the American people are looking for.
And Caitlin, about 30 seconds, go ahead. Strategic.
I would say Carmela's message right on track. I would argue that in terms of investing resources, we need to do a better job at recruiting candidates at that local state level. The Republican Party has been so good in the last 20 years in doing that and building a really strong farm team, and we need to do the same thing. For 2020, our focus shouldn't even be primarily on the House and Senate, although definitely we want to try to win those back. But it needs to be at state Senate races, state House races, because the redistricting is going to happen at the state level, and who controls, governorships, those things are going to really, really matter. So that's where we kind of need to be putting our resources ahead of 2020.
We are talking about the future of the Democratic Party with Caitlin Sweeney, press secretary for the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and with Carmel Martin, executive vice president for policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Let me quote something that Bernie Sanders said on Stephen Colbert's show shortly after the election in November. He said, "The truth is Democrats should not be losing to a candidate who insults so many people, who wants to give huge tax breaks to the top 0.2%, and who rejects climate change." Let me read some comments here. One from Eric: "You can't seriously address the loss of Democrats in the state houses without talking about the GOP's high-tech gerrymandering." A comment from Richard: "Hillary's policies were completely overshadowed by the Democrats' constant attacks on Trump's personality. No one knew exactly what she had planned." An email from Laura: "The Democratic Party likely would have swept elections in November if their message over the last 8 years included calling out the GOP for abandoning Americans to hurt the president." Let me go back to both of you, and actually let me go back to you, Caitlin, and then to you, Carmel. And what I hear you both saying is that it's clear that how Donald Trump ran as a candidate, and just looking at who he's tapping to be part of his administration, we're talking about billionaires, we're talking about insiders, we're talking about lobbyists. Many people say that is the swamp of Washington, D.C. Is it smart, do you think, Caitlin, for the Democrats to sit on the sidelines and see what Donald Trump does, and assuming that he will not be able to come through on his campaign promises, and then those people that voted for him, that had voted for Democrats, will come back to the party?
I think one thing you remember is that Trump is never going to be as popular as he is right now. Right? Presidents are never as popular at any point in their administration as they are after they get elected, before they're inaugurated. So he's at his peak of his popularity, and a majority of the country did not vote for him. And even a majority of his own supporters didn't really think that he was qualified in terms of being president. They just liked that he was going to bring this change to Washington, and he was going to shake up the status quo. And now he is stocking his administration with D.C. insiders, with billionaires intent on self-dealing. He is made it clear that he's going to double down on his draconian anti-immigration, anti-Muslim, anti-women policies, that he is going to take wholesale parts of Ryan's agenda to privatize Medicare, all of these things that voters did not put him in the White House to do. A winning message for Democrats is to point out that hypocrisy, is to point out to Trump supporters, you picked this guy for this reason. And if you strip Trump of his, you know, of the anti-change message, the anti-status quo message, if you strip that away, then he's just a con man that people don't generally like. So for Democrats, we need to constantly be pointing out that he is leaving his supporters behind, and that the only party that has a real agenda to build rebuild the working class, to strengthen the working class of all races, is the Democratic Party.
Let me go to you, Carmel, and add one more thing. Donald Trump made Carrier, the air conditioning company, a centerpiece of his campaign about what was wrong with the United States. They were talking about moving to Mexico. Well, it looks like Donald Trump and Mike Pence are going to Indiana tomorrow because Carrier has decided to keep about 1,000 jobs in the state and not move Carrier to Mexico. Is that not a win for Donald Trump and certainly a win for those people that work for Carrier?
Well, there's a lot of questions about that that we'll have to wait and see on. For example, they were always talking about keeping 400 jobs in state. So is it really 1,000 jobs or 600 jobs? How much money was the company given to keep the jobs there? How much credit does Donald Trump really deserve for them staying there versus the Indiana officials who had been working to keep them there and had gotten the 400 jobs to begin with? So I'm skeptical that he deserves a lot of credit for that just yet. I'd like to learn a lot more about it, but also just want to echo that I agree with the points that Caitlin made about what Democrats need to do moving forward. We really need to keep Donald Trump accountable for not living up to his promise to drain the swamp, doing the exact opposite. And I think it's going to be, I think when he starts moving forward with his agenda, Democrats really need to work hard to fight him every step of the way on things like breaking up millions of families by deporting them, not moving forward versus moving forward with comprehensive immigration reform, which is a vast majority of Americans, over 90%, think is what we need to do. I think he's going to have a really tough time dismantling the Affordable Care Act, as he's promised to do. In your news segment before we came on the air, they pointed out that people struggling with their medical bills has plummeted in the last 5 years. 13 million people, less people are struggling with medical bills. When he starts to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, those people are going to start struggling again, and there's going to need to be consequences for that. So I think in the meantime, Democrats need to do everything they can to stop him from hurting those people and stop from those reforms from going through. But I do think, to your earlier point, that some of these things are going to be they're going to be a lot harder to do. But if he succeeds in doing them, they're going to hurt real people. And I think those people hopefully will see that that's not the path forward.
But Carmel, what I hear you say is pretty much what Hillary Clinton was saying on the campaign trail. And yet that message, I mean, we can do the popular vote thing, but nonetheless, she did concede, and it looks like Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States. That message that you just described, that in many ways is what Hillary Clinton talked about, that did not work.
Well, I guess my point is that if he actually is successful in doing some of these things that he's committed to doing, like dismantling the Affordable Care Act with no replacement in place of it, which is what they're talking about doing, is repealing it and delaying any kind of replacement for 2 years. I think that when the consequences of that hit, I think people will appreciate. I think it will be bad for Donald Trump. I think it'll be a lot harder for him to do that than he thinks it's going to be to do. And I think, a lot of people seem to have voted for him because they thought he was going to drain the swamp in Washington. And he's every single day we get a new announcement that shows he's doing the exact opposite. And I think we need to really shine a light on that, make sure that there's consequences for that, bring to the forefront that he's making deals with foreign governments that benefit his own companies before he's even entered office. He's refused to put his money and his businesses in a blind trust. He's bringing his children into the government dealings in a way that's highly inappropriate, unconstitutional. So I think what Democrats really need to do is make sure that we're bringing those things to light and fighting him every step of the way.
Let me get Colin from Kennett Square to join our conversation. Hi, Colin. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was involved in the Bernie Sanders campaign and before that in Root Strikers and various other groups. And one of the biggest issues that I felt united people around the Sanders campaign and also for Hillary Clinton when she made so many concessions in her policy was this message of corruption in our government, fundamentally changing how it works. And I think that message, if as a party, the Democratic Party, can unify around a narrative around that message and have people understand how corruption affects the way the government works, I think in the future we will have real change to believe in that people will vote for.
Colin, let me see what Caitlin Sweeney has to say. Part of the problem, I think, with corruption is that oftentimes the things that people do, the implosion on Wall Street is an example of this, is that it wasn't illegal. They didn't necessarily break the law. Perhaps mm-hmm. some of them did. But in many ways, it was the way things are done here. Is an anti-corruption campaign a winning strategy?
Well, corruption isn't just taking a bribe. Corruption is, you know, acting in a way, I think, to further corporate interests already have a greater seat at the table than working families, than organized labor, than, you know, groups all across the country. So that I think is actually a stronger message of it, like the systemic critique of the system that corporations and special interests get way more attention than they should. And Trump has made it very clear that is what he intends to do. I mean, you have Wilbur Ross and you have Steve Mnuchin, who just announced today as Treasury and Commerce. You have Betsy DeVos as Education, who in Michigan has spent the last 30 years pushing an agenda to privatize and defund public schools in favor of corporate-run, for-profit institutions with little accountability. So what we need to make clear to the American people is that Trump and Republicans are having just a fire sale of public services, of the American government in favor of corporations, and we need to be calling that out. And we need to make it clear that corruption doesn't just come in, you know, quid pro quo. It's more subtle than that. It is very, sly that way, but we need to be calling it out.
Colin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me read some more comments. An email from John. Hillary Clinton is absolutely what is wrong with the Democratic Party. She and the party are out of touch with the American people. A comment from Adam. They didn't pay attention to 2010 and what issues really swayed voters against the current agenda, such as health care cost concerns and immigration. A tweet from Thaddeus. American people hate neoliberal economics. An email from Ronald. I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but I believe that Bernie Sanders would have lost to Trump in a landslide. Let me go back to you, Carmel, and we'll get some more callers in on the conversation as well. I mean, in many ways, you can make Donald Trump the focus of the critique, and there's certainly good reasons to do that as a party. But what I'm also hearing both of you say, and even coming from our listeners as well, is that you have to focus on down-ballot races. You have to focus on grassroots levels. You have to focus where people live, you know, where politics really has an impact on their personal lives. Can you do all of that as a party?
Well, I'm not in charge of the party. But
no, I know
do
that.
But I do think the party.
But you do work for the Center for American Progress, and John Podesta, you know, headed up Hillary Clinton's campaign and all of that.
No, you know, my advice to the party is that they do need to do that. That we need to, as Caitlin was saying earlier, we really do need to build a grassroots movement in the party, and we also have to reinvigorate the Obama coalition. We We need to respond to the needs of people of color. We need to respond to the needs of women. But we also need to respond to the needs of working class men of all races. And those are the people who did not vote for Hillary Clinton at the same numbers that they voted for Barack Obama. And I think we need to do that by showing that we need to build an economy that's good for everyone, not just particular groups in the economy. I think we need to move. I think that the caller's point about health care costs are down because of the Affordable Care Act, but that doesn't mean that health care costs for individual families were not going up. They went up less than they would have gone absent the Affordable Care Act, so that's something we need to tackle. There's things we can do about that, and we need to do something about that, make that a priority, and we need to show people that their government's working for them, not, again, not for moneyed interests. So I think that that needs to be the focus moving forward.
Caitlin, I'm curious about what you think the issues are going forward, and also whether it makes sense for the party to be incremental, to go big and bold on certain issues. How do you see the strategy moving ahead?
Well, we need a sharp economic message for sure, and part of that is going bold. And we talk about healthcare costs, for example. Yes, 20 million people got health insurance that didn't have it. It did a lot to control rising premium costs. It still went up, but less than they would have. You can be on your parents' insurance when you're 26. There's a lot of great things in the ACA that have done a tremendous amount to improve people's lives. But at the end of the day, it's something like 3% of people in this country actually purchase insurance through the exchanges. So, you know, part of the problem of like Obamacare was it actually wasn't bold enough. If we'd had a public option or some form of that affected everyone equally, then it would have, people would have responded more favorably to it. So incremental change, the problem with that generally is it tends to segment the population of saying, well, we're going to help certain groups, try to elevate it. And the American people generally, the most popular programs are things like Medicare and Social Security that affect everybody equally. So what we need talking about are bolder plans, a strong economic message that is about rebuilding the middle class, strengthening working families in this country. If you're really following the path of Elizabeth Warren and going after banks, you know, pushing for her greater Wall Street reform, pushing for a public health care option, debt-free college, these plans are widely popular with voters across the country. The policies isn't what cost Hillary the election. I think it was that as a party, we just haven't had a cohesive message from the top of the ticket on down that really speaks to those economic and social concerns of voters.
Well, we're just about out of time here. Jose, unfortunately, we can't take his call, but he also talks about the Democratic Party not addressing what he describes as classism or class. Carmel, is that a problem? And we're almost out of time here.
Well, I do think we need to get at the fact that the government needs to be doing more to build the middle class, support the middle class, help people move into the middle class, and be less focused on people at the top 1% of America. So I think to a certain extent that is a class issue, but it's about making the economy better for everyone, because we know that if you build a healthy middle class, that is the way to get a growing economy. It's not that the healthy middle class is a product of a healthy economy. It's that building a healthy middle class is the way to grow the economy for everyone. So I think we really need to be very focused on that and be keeping up that drumbeat, which is why we need an infrastructure plan that is
investing real
money.
And we really need to end the hour. Sorry to do that to you, Carmel. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
Carmel Martin, thanks for joining us. And she's from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And Caitlin Sweeney, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
From the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.